This is JimBinbo.com e-news number 267, the 12th of June, 2009. This e-news is read by JimBinbo's text-to-speech robot Jimbo, or Jimbot, if you prefer. As usual, there are 5 items, and 3 feedbacks in this issue of e-news. Item 1. One Schneider launches Energy University. Last week, I attended Schneider Electric's Analysts Conference in Newport, Rhode Island. I was there in my automation analyst role. Several key executives were there. It was interesting to note the eclectic executive mix included just one genuine Frenchman, Dynamic Laurent Vernery, who is now CEO of APC. For the year-end 2008, Schneider had revenues over $25 billion, 6% growth, 10% annual average, with earnings of $3.8 billion, up 7.5%. These are significant results, considering the current recessionary environment. The new One Schneider program provides focus for the company's many different acquisitions and brands. Business managers are judged by strict metrics which include success in achieving the integrations and branding to the new Schneider vision. Gary Minchill, editor of Automation World, wrote in his weblog, "Every time I attend a Schneider Electric event lately, I'm amazed at how the company has remade itself over the last 4 years or so. The executive team is thoroughly international. It is definitely no longer a classic French company." At these meetings, Schneider announced the debut of Energy University, a vendor-neutral online educational community that provides the fundamentals needed to implement successful energy-efficient solutions. Paul Hamilton has enrolled as Senior VP of Schneider's Energy and Solution University. Paul, who joined Schneider through the acquisition of Modicon over a decade ago, explained why he is still enthusiastic about the company. "After many years and many changes, this is still a fun place to work." Item 2. Future of the Internet. While PCs were once the primary means of accessing the Internet, we are now seeing Internet-enabled devices such as PDAs and cell phones that access the web. Soon, everything from your car to your refrigerator will be connected to the global network to provide new functionality. But the current Internet architecture is running into problems, precisely because of its runaway success. It is on a path to a lockdown, ending the cycle of innovation and demanding new kinds of control against spam, virus attacks, and sheer abuse of free web-based access. Here's a major problem which few recognize. iPods, iPhones, Xboxes, and TiVos represent the first wave of tethered appliances that cannot easily be modified by anyone except their vendors. These are already being used to control users' behaviors in insidious ways. GPS systems can be reconfigured to eavesdrop on users, TiVo reports what you've been watching, cell phone emails can be monitored, Google and Facebook applications can be controlled from a central source, making censorship easy. The very nature of the Internet is at risk. Several emerging technologies are being developed by a consortium of about 300 members. U.S. educational institutions, corporations, and government agencies. Known as Internet 2, this spans the globe with hundreds of high-speed networks linked by fiber-optic backbones. Internet 2 transmits data at speeds up to 100 gigabits per second, some 1,000 times faster than today's cable modems. This allows many real-world high-speed applications, and makes way for 21st-century services like interactive television, virtual 3D video conferencing, and other new-generation applications. High-speed networks will make it possible to work in ways never possible before. Item 3. The future of social welfare. What is a welfare state? The simple answer is a government that provides for the total well-being of all its citizens. The welfare state is somewhat socialist in nature. It redistributes wealth by heavily taxing the middle and upper classes in order to provide goods and services for those seen as underprivileged. One of the greatest challenges of sustainable growth is to combine the desires for economic prosperity and social security, reconciling the power of free markets with the reassuring protections of social insurance. Most advanced nations are not true welfare states, although many provide at least some social services or entitlement programs designed to help the most vulnerable. The Achilles heel of democracy is that the rich control the media to manipulate the middle class, and the poor don't vote, and so power gravitates to wealth. In an autocracy, welfare is seen as benevolence of the power structure. As we proceed to the future, all industrial nations are aging. For most, their major social welfare expenses becoming programs for the aged. As a greater proportion of the population ages, the burden on the rest will become too great to sustain. In America, the bubble of retirement entitlements will inevitably bankrupt Social Security, dwarfing other welfare problems. Industrial countries have undergone sharp declines in fertility. Only America has retained a positive replacement rate, primarily because of immigration. For Europe and other first world countries, the economic consequences of this trend with social welfare programs are calamitous. The swings from the perceived benevolence of socialism to the misunderstood malevolence of capitalism will continue in the future. Perhaps forever. Item 4. High-value manufacturing. The age of large factories is over. Today's markets are consumption-limited, not production-limited. Manufacturing matters. A national economy begins to decline as its wealth-producing sectors shrink. Manufacturing, mining and agriculture. Other parts of the economy maintain and use physical wealth, but do not create it. They depend on manufacturing and other wealth-producing sectors for their growth. American manufacturing is historically responsible for the relatively higher standard of living enjoyed by Americans compared to other countries, and a thriving manufacturing base is necessary to allow that trend to continue. How can the U.S. economy be strong if manufacturing is weak? The paradoxical answer is that the decline in the share of manufacturing jobs, deindustrialization of the U.S. economy, is actually a sign of strength, not weakness. As with agriculture 100 years before, the drop in employment in manufacturing stems from spectacular productivity growth. Over the last three decades, improved automation has churned out manufactured goods with ever-increasing efficiency. The U.S. economy no longer needs lots of factory workers for the same reason it no longer needs lots of farmers. It can produce what it requires with far fewer people. The question quickly becomes, how to redeploy the vast numbers of people displaced from conventional jobs in large, central factories? Recessions, however unpleasant, are cathartic and therefore necessary. They release capital and labor from profitless activities as an essential prelude to redeploying them elsewhere. The challenge today is redeploying our labor force to lead the world in new manufacturing directions. Manufacturing high-value products doesn't mean simply cutting, shaping, assembling. We must focus our prowess not on manufacturing commodities, but rather on becoming innovators and specialists in new types of high-value manufacturing such as nanoassembly, micromechanical systems, chemical engineering, or biomechanisms. Item 5. Book. Automation Made Easy. Industrial automation is a complex mixture of many different types of instruments, systems, hardware, software, and services, in many different types of applications. If you are confused or perplexed, this new book by two experienced automation experts will help. Dr. Peter Martin, Vice President of Invenzys Process Systems, has teamed up with Gregory Hale, editor of ISA's In Tech magazine, to publish a new book, Automation Made Easy. Everything you wanted to know about automation, and need to ask. This easy-to-read book provides a basic functional understanding about industrial automation. The authors break down the barriers and confusion surrounding technical details and terminology. They provide an introductory-level approach, ideal for executives, business, marketing, advertising and sales managers, IT and maintenance people, production planners, accounting managers. Here's an in-depth but easy overview for people new to the field who want to be quickly educated. As usual, there are three feedbacks in this issue of E-News. Feedback 1. John Bleasey is passionate about the future of energy. Says John, "The biggest obstacle to the future of energy is closed thinking. I am always hearing tidbits such as, we can't use wind, because the wind does not blow all the time, we can't use solar, because the sun does not shine all the time, then they quit thinking. Come on, guys, think outside the box, make the unimaginable happen. Who would have thought 25 years ago that today I could hold 16,000 floppies on a device smaller than my little finger? Look where we could be now if we had funded and sustained research on alternate fuels since the gas crunch of the 70s. We may run out of any one form of energy or another, but there will also be energy on Earth if man takes the steps to utilize and conserve. Feedback 2. Bob Fritz raises several practical points regarding the future of wars. Bob writes, Jim, your thesis is that WMDs have made war so terrible that we will stop resorting to it. Alfred Nobel said this about his invention of dynamite, and Robert Gatling thought the same about his machine gun. Both were wrong. I doubt this will happen. Mutual assured destruction, which prevented US-USSR wars, only works if both parties think they have too much to lose. There will be two things different about war in the future, and now. First, it is non-symmetric. Fanatics are willing to blow themselves up even if they know they cannot destroy the enemy militarily. They are willing to die to cause damage which will upset the enemy's electorate, please their own god, or whatever. The guy who blows up a police station with dynamite would not be deterred from blowing up a city with a nuclear bomb, assuming he got one from the North Koreans or someone else. Second, war is very transparent. This means that our side cannot incinerate thousands of civilians or burn thousands of enemies' homes to the ground. Our non-symmetric enemies know this. Accordingly, we no longer seem to have wars with an objective which we can pursue with single-minded determination to quickly bring victory. Instead, we have endless munching and bumbling, trying to root out a few terrorists. Such wars go on seemingly forever, exhausting the stronger power financially and emotionally, until at last the stronger power's population demands that they give up and lose. Feedback 3. Tangela Kuhn Miller provides some excellent tips regarding the future of healthcare. Recently, when listening to NPR, they had Dr. Pam Popper talking about the future of healthcare treatments. I guess a growing number of physicians are turning against drugs and surgeries. They are healing people with lifestyle changes. These doctors speak out against drugs, meat, dairy products, milk, etc. Dr. Popper also talked about how our lab results, like cholesterol and sugar, should be something that is bragged about. Also, will exercise be blended into our lifestyles more frequently? Hopefully, people will invent ways to get exercise into our daily lives. It is so hard to make time for exercise. Well, that's this issue of e-news. Please send us your feedback. Tell Jim how you like me, his Jimbot text-to-speech robot. Send your email to jim@jimpinfo.com. Thank you.